and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 324. Today we're talking Veronica Mars season 4 episode 5, Losing Streak. My name is Danielle and I will be your host for today, and I am joined by my two lovely co-hosts, Kristen and Kendra.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello. If you'd like to get in contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can come join our Facebook group. We're Rewatchables Rewinders. Just search for that on Facebook. It's got Veronica Mars basically all over it. You can't miss it. We have really great conversations there, and we would love for more people to join. So again, that's Rewatchables Rewinders on Facebook. So as I said, I am Danielle. If you've been listening to this round so far, I should sound familiar as I've been hosting every single one. So I'm going to defer to my two co-hosts today to get you used to their voices. And we're going to start our fun facts with Kendra. Kendra, what is your fun fact for this week?
My fun fact is I was in Toronto last weekend visiting a couple of my friends, and they have kind of like lightly to medium themed Harry Potter bar there called The Lockhart.
Oh, yes. Fun. I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. And I had been before a few years ago, and pretty much everything was the same. Like obviously they don't have any licensing, so everything's pretty light. Like even the name, The Lockhart, and then basically they just have like themed drinks. Like they've got something called Better Beer, which is like a kind of a butterscotchy drink that they serve with like toasted marshmallows. And then they have something called the Befuddlement Draft. And I remember last time I was there, I went and asked the bartender, I was like, what's in the Befuddlement Draft? And they're just like, every alcohol. Everyone is in there.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, okay, so we got one. And like this time they had some summer specials. So they had the Rum Weasley and the Shacklebolt. It was all super fun. And they have like, down in the bathroom, they have like the enemies of the air beware painted on the mirror and stuff. There's little pictures of Dobby everywhere. The walls in the hallway are lined with like pages from the books. It's super fun. It's really cute. But last time I was there was like 3 years ago, and we got the Befuddlement Draft. So it comes in a pitcher. That's like the liquid in it is clear. And then there's two shot glasses like screwed on top of it. One's blue, one's red. And the top one's on fire. So you kind of have to like make the potion. So you blow out the flame, like pour one shot glass in, pour the other shot glass in, and then stir it up, and then your potion's done. So last time it was just like the little flame on top of the shot glass. And now they are really upping the ante with the fire. And like the whole thing came on fire. They brought like a blowtorch to the table essentially, and we're just like flaming it everywhere. And now like half of their drinks are on fire. Like they just really doubled down on the fire.
Oh my God. Like,
and there's no
way. Safe?
I can't imagine. Like, I can't imagine.
People don't usually go together very well.
Right. So they're just throwing flames everywhere. And my friend actually asked, like the waitress came to the table and he was like, can we have one of each of your drinks that come on fire? So there was just like an unbelievable amount of fire on the table. And there's no like magical ceremony to it. They literally just come over with like a flamethrower and start like going crazy on the drinks. It was so fun. Anyway, if you're in Toronto, I highly recommend it.
Or you're going to be like me and make a point of going to Toronto so you can just drink things that are on fire.
Well, I recognized the waitress, and I thought maybe it was just because of like seeing her there last time, but I was like, I'm pretty sure I worked with her in university. So this time I asked her, I was like, did you go to Acadia University where I went? She's like, yeah. And I was like, we worked together for years, and apparently her husband owns the bar.
So what you're telling us is that you have an in.
I've got an in. We could have a high school party there. A rewatchable party.
Oh my God, yes, please. I mean, I want that in general, just to have a party with everyone. But yeah. This would be so fun. Yeah.
Ideal venue. Oh,
that is an amazing fun fact. I love it so much. I don't know. Kristen, can you follow that?
I mean, I'm not even going to really try.
Yeah, that's fair.
Today is the beginning of NFL football for me, at least. I know it technically started like Thursday, but I don't really care about any of those teams. The Lions play today, and I'm very excited because it means that I get to go over to my mom and dad's house, and they usually feed me, which means I don't have to feed myself. And
fantastic.
I get to, yeah, and I get to, like, you know, razz my little brother, and it's good times. So I'm really excited for football to be back because as much as I love summer, and I really do, I'm kind of ready for fall, and football is the start for me. It always starts with football, so I'm ready for boots and sweaters and scarves and all that good stuff.
All of the things, and apple cider and yes. Cozy candles. And
peppermint hot chocolate is a thing that mm-hmm. somewhere around the end of October, I give in and I'm just done. Like, mm-hmm. just bring it all. Just all of it.
So wonderful. But, yeah. I'm excited as well.
Definitely.
But so happy, happy early fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that your team does well.
Thanks. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So I literally have no fun facts of things that are happening, I think, right now. I can't think of anything. So I'm going to do a fun fact that I was telling a friend yesterday. That is like a weird fun fact about me. And that is, for the longest time, I don't know why, but as a kid, I thought that chocolate chip cookies were made with tomatoes, or like tomatoes went into chocolate chip cookies. And so now I have a weird association between the two. So whenever I see or eat or whatever, like chocolate chip cookies, I think of tomatoes and vice versa.
Wow. Did your parents tell you that?
I don't think so. I have like no idea where it came from. It's a very strange association, and I don't know how it happened.
I wonder if like you ate a cookie with like red chocolate chips
or something, or like it was like,
you know,
had like one of those tint? Like
Valentine's Day ones or something, yeah. And you were like, why are there tomatoes on my cookie? And then like from then on you were scarred for life.
Like, and it's not even like chunk of tomatoes, it's just like tomato puree or something. Like I thought like just tomato paste was in chocolate chip cookies. I have no idea.
That's really cute.
Yeah. So that is my fun fact about myself that has no timely relevance other than I was telling someone that yesterday. So on that bombshell, let's get into our discussion of Veronica Mars season 4, episode 5, Losing Streak. And just to recap what we all watched, Veronica and Keith try to figure out who has the worst taste in new friends, as Clyde and Nicole both look guiltier than ever. And I really do want to talk about all of the friendships happening here, because this is very much on point. But before, I guess, we talk about new friends, let's talk about old friends and Logan's issues with Leo. Because we kind of start off this episode with a mini Veronica and Logan, not fight, but uncomfortable conversation, to the point where like Logan is walking out the door and kind of mic dropping the fact that like he's suspicious or like uncomfortable with what's going on with Leo and Veronica. It's not, have we seen Logan do anything like this previously? Like if he has an issue, he's pretty snotty and upfront about it, and it was more of a mic drop, but this feels very different, but also kind of strange. How did this play out for both of you?
I think that's a good point. And it felt strange in a lot of ways, especially since in the last episode, he kind of just shrugged off the fact that Leo had been there. So I think maybe what he was reacting more to was the fact that Veronica had been kind of dishonest with how much time she was spending with him. So I think it might just be built into a greater issue of Veronica not being a great communicator and not being super open in their relationship. I think that might be where some of it was coming from. It was weird. It was a very stark contrast with how he reacted just in the last episode to Veronica and Leo.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it definitely stems from, not that he just like showed up with a pizza and like they have inside jokes or whatever, because he clearly didn't care that much about that. Just as I'm sure Veronica wouldn't care so much if one of Logan's random exes just showed up, you know, like she'd care, but it wouldn't be like, horrible jealousy or anything, I don't think. But I do think that maybe Veronica keeping from him how much time she had spent with Leo because of this or that or whatever, I think that is more of what's bugging him. Not the fact that it's Leo or whatever, it's that she's keeping secrets and not telling him that she's spending time with her exes. And that, I mean, that would bug anybody, so I kind of get it.
Yeah, it's just the image of him walking out the door and getting sort of like the last jab is just very, very odd. Kendra, I know that you've seen this season previously because we watched it before it came out. And Kristen, you're still watching week to week, correct?
Yes.
So in thinking about that, do you think that Logan has any reason to be worried about Leo?
No, not at all. I mean, it's so odd. Like, I think if it was a different one of Veronica's, like, exes, then maybe he would have reason to be a little worried. Like, I don't know. I can't even think of who specifically I think would be a problem, because I think her and Piz have basically just, you know, gone their separate ways, and that's donezo. Yeah. But, like, her and Leo, as much as like it was cute when they kind of dated, it felt more like they just kind of found an equal. Like, he loved kind of razzing her about the whole his profession and being a cop, and she liked making his life difficult as a PI. And like, I think they just kind of found this like kismet thing that wasn't like, I'm in love with you and I want to be with you forever. They just really click. Like, their personalities mesh really well, and they're really great friends. And so I don't see any reason why he should be jealous about it, because it's not like, you know, I don't get that from them. I don't get, like, this is her real true love. Like, no, it's just they have a really good rapport, and they both have this passion for, like, the truth and for, you know, putting guilty people behind bars, and they have that in common more so than her and Logan. And so it's something she has to share with Leo that she doesn't share with him. So no, if it was me, I would say no, Logan doesn't have any reason to be worried. Veronica knows how to spend time with people and not be like interested in them.
Mm-hmm. I was on defense hard every time Leo showed up in the revival, mostly because of reading the book.
Yeah.
And there was some Veronica Leo stuff, like, I don't think anything physical happened, but just like emotionally wise and like spending time together, there was some Veronica Leo stuff, which I think is canon because Logan brought it up, I think, in this episode that they spent time together when he was away.
Yep.
So I was so on defense every time Leo was there, because like reading through it happening in the book, and like Logan being who he was before was kind of volatile, and their relationship was always pretty turbulent. And then she chose that over Piz, which is like the safe, nice, like really easy living option. And I was like, maybe Leo is kind of the perfect compromise between those two that she's like supposed to find.
Oh, interesting. Uh-huh.
So I don't know, but I still am team Logan and Veronica 100%. So I was very conflicted. And like, I was very worried going through it the first time.
Yeah, no, I had the same concerns for the same reason. Yeah, especially within the last episode when Veronica was saying like to Logan, I told you about that rape case and like how I needed Leo's help with because he was in San Diego police force and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, so the books are canon. And in the books, nothing like actually ever happens. There's no cheating. There's nothing of that, but there are like wavering thoughts. And so I did the same thing and very much carried that into this season with what's going on. But I think, Kristen, I think you had a great point too that I didn't consider. And especially with kind of the theme of this episode sort of being about friendship, I think you're right. I think Veronica sees something in Leo, seems like sees a similarity between the two of them that she doesn't have with very many other people. Perhaps even something that she doesn't have with her dad, like where they've gone through some stuff. They know that they are the issue in a lot of their relationships. And so I like the way that you're viewing it, because I did not consider that previously, but I think that's an excellent angle to look at this.
I mean, especially since she doesn't have a lot of peers mm-hmm. who are into this the way like her dad is, and like she has contacts and she knows, you know, she's met PIs, but they've always been older than her. They've always been, you know, her dad's friends or her dad's contact or whatever. So to have her find somebody who is generally her age, to find a peer that she can kind of share the same thing with, I've always gotten like massive friendship vibes from them. But, you know, there is always that potential when you're that good of friends. There's always a little bit of potential for like, could this be a thing?
Yes.
But it's just never been something that kind of jumped out at me. So
yeah, no, that's a great point. I like thinking about it that way. Obviously this isn't going away. If this is something that is being explicitly brought up in the show, we will be talking about it again. But I kind of want to switch gears a little bit. While this episode is very much about friendship, I think it's also very much about the ways, I think, in which women are treated as well. And we get the first scene of this with Police Chief Langdon. And we get her a couple times, I think, in this episode. She kind of flits in and out, but we see her at the beginning of this episode, and the kid who was gross and like coming onto girls and trying to rape girls, who had the collar bomb put around his neck, his dad visits the police station. And that whole interaction is just so cringeworthy, because the dad is a terrible person. We can kind of see it from the outset. The dad doesn't make... his opinions aren't wrong on things. Like, it does very much seem like perhaps the police are dragging their feet or not doing everything they can, given that these are very much terrorist activities. So he does make some good points, but he's also so patronizing and just so gross. And I loved both the first time I saw this episode and this time. I love watching Marsha, can I call you Marsha, take him down. It was very gratifying to me. But I guess the question is, was it appropriate the way in which she took him down? Like, yes, he was not speaking to her how he should have at all. But she's also the police chief. So what is her responsibility here to interact with other people? Was it too unprofessional? I hate saying that because she's a woman, but let me hear your thoughts. How did that read for you?
I think that's an interesting way to phrase the question in the context of how people treat women, because regardless of her reaction, it seems like anytime anyone speaks to this woman, they're angry. Like, there's, mm-hmm. it seems every single interaction is anger infused, and maybe it does have some, yeah, exactly. And maybe it does have something to do with the fact that she's a woman in that position of power that that's being driven from. So I don't know, regardless of if her reaction was professional or unprofessional, if that's how everyone's coming at you all the time, like, I would never fault anyone for lashing out, especially yeah. if that guy is being like insanely douchey.
Yeah, if he would have come to her as like a grieving father and, you know, and been anxious for news or whatever, if he would not have come at her like an opponent, then I don't think she would have treated him like an opponent. And because he was so gross and just like, you know, angry and upset, like, I get that he has those feelings, like, that's fine, but you can't treat people like that and expect them not to get, you know, not to snap at you. And so, yeah, I didn't have any issues with her treating him like that, because, I mean, she's the police chief. her job is to get answers. And clearly this bomber has, you know, like, this is not the first time something like this has happened. It's the first time one person has been specifically killed by a bomb, but like, they've been dealing with this for weeks. So, you know, it's like, she's doing her best. Obviously she doesn't have answers for you, or you would already know. And, you know, like, coming in and screaming at her isn't going to help things go any faster.
And I think a huge problem in Neptune is that everyone is always kind of rolled over to do whatever the rich people want. So to have someone in power that's going to stand up to them is important.
Mm-hmm. True. Yes.
And I think she does that well. I think it's just also, does she do that well, but doesn't do her job well too? Because we get this interaction in the beginning, and it's very great to just see her tell him to like take a seat and just like take him down. But then the next time we see her, there is a letter from the bomber, is basically how it's presented. And she follows the directions of the letter completely and almost without hesitation. And yeah. I'm not sure what to make of that, because I want to see her succeed. She very much looks like she is capable, and she has done things to prove that she is capable. But then at the same time, she does things like following not a ransom note, but like following a threatening letter.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird. I was so surprised when the mayor was like getting out of his car. I was like, mm-hmm. So they're not even going to like discuss the options here? Because that is like, I think Cliff says later in the episode, like, oh, I always say I never negotiate with terrorists. So, like, right. Obviously Cliff never says that, but everyone always says that. And their first thing was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do whatever they want. That was super weird.
I think that he was initially like, he was just going to say no. It wasn't until his like assistant kind of ganged up on him that he gave in. So like, I don't know. It was a little strange that she was so on board, especially like when she's reading the note with her deputy or whatever, and she just smiles and is like, is this seriously what, like, did anybody read this or whatever? And then the next scene you see her in the mayor's office talking about the note with him and all of that. Like her initial response, like, she smiles at the letter, like, oh, this is good. And that seemed a little odd. Like, I know it's kind of funny what the bomber is requesting, but like, at the same time, it's still a terrorist threat. Mm-hmm. And that seems a little like blasé. I mean, at least he's not asking for, you know, $20 million or something, but like, it's still a threat, and it's, you know, should be something you take seriously. So I was a little taken aback by the fact that she was kind of taking it so blasé.
And I'm curious if it feels that way because we don't get to see a lot of the police work that happens. We only see like these randomly selected moments, and it seems like every moment that's selected is one of nonchalance and just ineptitude. And it's just a weird, I can't tell how the show wants us to feel about her, especially in comparison to the lambs that we've had previously.
That I can 100% agree with you on, because it seemed at the beginning that they were trying to show us how competent these people were and like how non-corrupt they are compared to the lambs and compared to the people we've seen in power before. But at the same time, they're still, you know, taking Keith and Veronica's work and, you know, playing it off as their own and missing leads and not following up on leads because they don't want to take the advice of a PI. And like, they seem like they're a better version of a police force, but like, they still fall victim to some of the same things that were happening before.
It's just so weird. It's so weird. And then,
yeah, it's kind of like, the show is a little bit almost like schizophrenic about it. Like, they kind of lead you to believe they know what they're doing. And then, you know, Keith has to do their whole job for them. And then it's like, well, wait, which is it?
And then throwing in the lens of like, not, I don't want to say a feminist lens, but very much the layer that she is a woman in this job and how that changes everything too.
Yeah.
Like it feels like they're trying to say something, but I just can't quite puzzle it out.
I feel like we need some sort of like moment between her and a confidant that kind of like explains where she is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably help. Yeah.
It would help. And I don't know if that confidant is even her deputy, because he seems kind of wishy-washy and inept as well.
Yeah. He's always just standing there
smirking,
literally just standing in the corner.
Yeah. Very much so. It's very odd. Yeah. So with these interactions, like I said, we get the thing with the dad at the beginning, and then obviously he has to go and be all bro afterwards. He walks outside and offers up yet another reward. Because we've had rewards posted for this previously, haven't we? Outside of?
I think the Maloofs did something.
Did they? Okay.
But that might've just been for the ring, but the ring's not lost. So no, I'm not sure.
Okay. So basically, this is only going to escalate from here, with everyone and their mother trying to find the bomber, I guess, and make accusations and not know how the law works. One more random thing I actually wanted to point out about that interaction between the sheriff and the dad was it stuck out to me this time that he was basically saying, like, the pizza delivery man pointed at that one guy during the meeting and accused him of being the bomber. Why hasn't he been like taken in for questioning? And that stuck out to me because it seems like we have varying degrees of like desperation in terms of like solving this. And also this guy is very much like a slimy dude, but he's also a rich slimy dude. And so in their world, it's very much like, accuse and arrest first and like forget the rules and go back to them later. I don't know. That moment just stood out to me as like, well, if someone named him as maybe a potential suspect, like why haven't you taken him in immediately without even asking about the police work? Like, have you even looked into him or anything like that? It was just immediate, like take him in.
Especially since it was another rich white guy that he was pointing the finger at.
Yeah, that's also strange. I don't know. There are interesting moments in here that really stick out and almost like a sore thumb. And kind of moving actually into Wallace's housewarming party, there are a few moments in here that stick out to me for weird reasons as well. But basically, so Wallace and his wife have a housewarming party because I guess they moved recently. And I like that you noted in here, Kendra, that Veronica basically lives your everyday nightmare at Wallace's housewarming party. I would hate that party.
Yeah, that'd be a no for me.
Oh my God, it's so bad. But I mean, luckily, Nicole was there because she apparently knows Wallace. Or his wife, because I guess everyone knows everyone. But these kinds of parties are always good with fun friends, although their made up story for that woman, like, made me very uncomfortable.
How so?
I don't know. It was like she was a terrible person, but just like the lying, I think the lying is what made me uncomfortable. And like the just sheer trying to one-up this woman who's so self-involved. I don't know.
See, I just thought it was hilarious.
I mean,
Hakeem and Olajuwon, who comes up with that? Veronica Mars, that's who.
Veronica
she
Mars.
Could have named those children anything. And Hakeem and Olajuwon just gets me.
And Nicole immediately points out like where the names are from.
Right? Like she knows. And I love that too. Like it's kind of wonderful. Yeah. I mean, is it great that at Wallace's, you know, housewarming, she's lying to guests and creating, you know, basically just creating chaos to entertain herself and Nicole? Probably not the greatest, you know, thing, greatest quality in a house guest, but I mean, compared to what Veronica has done at previous parties and craziness, this is pretty tame for her.
is that our barometer here?
I mean, it could be.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's very entertaining and I do like seeing the two of them together. And it's nice to see Veronica have a friend who is someone who's on her level in a lot of ways. I think that Nicole and Veronica are almost on a similar level as Logan and Veronica, in that Nicole obviously is not perfect. She's had some shit happen to her. She's very capable. She's very sassy. She doesn't take shit from anyone. And I think Veronica kind of finds a kindred spirit in that, because I don't think she's had a friend completely to that level previously, especially a girl, right?
Yeah, because I mean, Mac, while was always up for like a little bit of chaos, she was not the kind of girl who wanted to walk in and create a scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like she, you know, she would wreak her own havoc behind the scenes, but she was never the kind of girl who wanted to be in on a crazy kind of made up, you know, she didn't want to show up somewhere and have to deal with people. So yeah, I think Nicole is the first or one of the first like girls in Veronica's life that has that same energy and that same vibe to her that Veronica has. And you're right, it is something that like her and Logan seem to kind of, it just is. It's not like they are, it's not something that I can like really put my finger on what exactly it is. They just kind of vibe. They have this understanding of, okay, I'm going to start, you know, like I'm going to walk in and I'm going to lie to this woman and start a story about your children. And you're just going to pick it up as we go, because it's better than sitting here listening to whatever she's got to say. Like they just have that understanding, and that's really cool.
I think Lily had that same energy to her, but Veronica almost seemed a little more meek in that relationship.
Yeah, because I don't think Veronica was even on that level at all.
Yeah.
It's interesting. And so after the party, or they kind of duck out of the party to go shooting, and this is kind of where I got taken out of it a little bit, and I wanted to get your thoughts on Veronica, gun safety and responsibility. To bring the books in again, in the books, Veronica has a little bit of tension with her dad. Her dad very much wants her to have a gun, learn how to shoot a gun, be a gun owner, to be able to protect herself, because she's gotten herself into so many scrapes in the past and he's concerned. And this is something that she is very hesitant to do. Like she talks about in the books how she doesn't like the way the gun feels, even when she's just holding it, let alone shooting it. And while I don't think, obviously, the books are not completely canon in this show, this scene stuck out to me because they have been, I assume they had a little bit to drink, but they've been vaping. They're very high, and there's no issue, there's no discussion of whether they should go shooting. And then Veronica hands Nicole her gun, and we don't know if Nicole has ever shot a gun before. And while Veronica did look very composed while she was shooting, I don't think she was completely sober at this point. So I guess I'm just curious as to, I don't think the show is making any sort of statements about guns or anything, but this just stood out to me as being not safe, not smart, and perhaps not something that Veronica would normally do, because it just seemed a little stupid.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even notice it that much, except for the first time Veronica brought out her gun, which I think was in the car with Maddie against the Fitzpatricks. Like that felt like a big moment, but then they played it off as so under the radar in this episode that like, I didn't even really notice it, except for my friend was watching the episode with me and he was like, where are they that they can just like be shooting guns right now?
Yeah. And like no one is calling the cops or anything. Even if it is a construction site, like there are still people who are nearby.
And like, how did they get there? Because I was like, oh, it's a California. Like you can drive out to the desert. He was like, they're high.
And it's the middle of the night. Nobody is at all alarmed that there are guns being fired. Like, this is Neptune. It's not, you know, like, people die. Yes, it happens in Neptune quite a bit. But I can't imagine that hearing guns go off repeatedly is, like, a normal occurrence for right? them. Or and they also, clearly were not in the middle of the desert. Like, they were in, like, an alley or something.
Yeah, they were in, like, a construction site, I'm assuming, in Neptune, where they're trying to build something fancy.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it seems very irresponsible. And also, like, when Veronica goes to answer her phone back at the party, her gun just tumbles out of her purse, and she doesn't do anything about it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I don't think the show's trying to say anything about guns or gun safety or anything like that. This was literally just a way for her and Nicole to, like, get this conversation that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I 100% don't think the show is actually saying anything. But it seems irresponsible to put a character we all know and love, to give her a gun, and kind of lackadaisical about her safety of it, especially when we know that she's not, like, a super, like, she's not super into owning a gun. Like, she has it, clearly. She carries it. She knows how to use it. We watch her, even high, hit those bottles like it's nobody's business. But at the same time, like, you know, the first rule of, especially, like, gun safety is not, you don't operate it under any influence. Like, that seems like a no-brainer.
I feel like we're in a moment where, like, you can't, there are certain things you can do on screen and play it off, and there are certain things you can't. Like, you can have pretty much any character drink a beer and no one's going to care about it, but you have a character vaping, you're making a statement. You have a character with a gun, you're making a statement whether you want to or not. Like, you're picking some sort of stance in a very real and relevant issue.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad. I mean, even if it kind of wasn't in the moment, I'm glad I'm kind of not alone in my hesitation, I guess, towards this whole sequence. It just struck me as very strange because, yeah, like Kendra, like you were saying, there are some things that require a lot of thought. And generally, I think of Rob Thomas as being someone who is thoughtful in that way. And he's always trying to be timely and have interesting conversations where he can. And this just felt very much outside of his norm and very much outside, like, of, like, what Veronica would actually do.
Yeah. There's a part of me who kind of wonders if this scene could have been done with, like, her stun gun instead of her gun. Like, if Nicole discovers her stun gun in her purse and, like, they sneak out and then, like, I don't know. I don't have a stun gun, so I don't know how it works. But, like, you know, like, they're messing around with it in the alley or something, or, like, shooting it at cardboard boxes and watching it, like, you know, burn circles or something. Still not a great activity to be doing while high, but a little less dangerous than shooting a gun. And I think you could have gotten a very similar, like, feel for the same thing than you would have putting a gun in the hand of somebody under the influence. Something about it just feels wrong, and it's because the gun, it's because they're high, and it's because they're not actually saying anything about the gun. It's just kind of an instrument to get them to this conversation.
Right. Like you said, like, ultimately it's about them having power and, like, them being angry at the ways in which men have been terrible, and the ways in which men have completely altered their lives. So I get that it was very much for that reason, but yeah, it just didn't seem, I feel like a stun gun would have done a good job because they never previously have talked about killing guys, but, like, they have no problem with beating them up with, like, the weighted gloves or Veronica stunning them or anything like that. But on the other hand, like, this also is supposed to be a priming moment for us potentially seeing Nicole as a possible bomber. So seeing that sort of bloodlust, which probably would not then work with a stun gun as well.
That's fair.
Yeah. It's complicated. It's very interesting. And I mean, Nicole does get real man-hatey. She starts listing out the terrible things guys have done to her. And as she's shooting, and we find out that she was also a victim of rape, which I think was a really interesting moment because she and Veronica, again, are very similar. There's not a lot of, I think Veronica expresses sympathy, but it's not like, oh my God, I'm so sorry kind of sympathy. You could just kind of feel it there. How did you guys feel about her reaction to Nicole's story?
I guess I didn't think too much about Veronica's reaction because the clear reaction for me was like maybe Nicole's involved in the bombings. So I don't know. I don't really remember how she reacted, other than the fact that Veronica didn't make that connection, which seemed strange.
Yeah, that is strange.
Yeah, I think that was more or less what stood out to me, is that Veronica didn't really put those, you know, she didn't make the connection, and she didn't, and correct me if I'm wrong, we've seen her past, like, when she's met other rape victims, especially in, like, season three in college, when, like, they were going through the whole, you know, serial rapist thing. Yep. Like, she was really quick to kind of, like, you know, show them how she's on their side and how she has experienced it and understands it. Like, she was always really open about that. And I don't think she said anything to Nicole about having shared that, did she?
I don't think so.
I don't think
so. And it felt kind of odd to me that they're, like, standing out there with a gun, shooting bottles, talking about all of this. And Veronica was not, like, quick to be like, girl, I get you. Like, I understand.
Hashtag.
Better than any of us wish we understood, you know? Like, I wish Veronica had said something like that, not necessarily because I think Nicole needed to hear it or anything, but because that's how Veronica has kind of taken that on before. Like, it's how she's always dealt with meeting other victims. She always has been like, you know, I've been through this too. Like, it, you know, you can, you know, you, it does get better or whatever. You know, like, she's always got a way to kind of, what's the word, relate to them. Like, she makes sure that they know that she understands what they're going through. And she didn't really take that angle here. And it felt kind of weird to me since we've seen her take it before.
Yeah, even with just a, that sucks kind of thing. Or like, I know how much that sucks. Or like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Even just like a passing reference mm-hmm. to like, unfortunately, I know that all too well, or, you know, just something, but she never really did. And she wasn't really putting the connections together with Nicole and the bombing and all of that. So like, it just kind of, yeah, something about it just didn't feel quite right.
Yeah. And Kendra, you put this question in here, which we're kind of slowly unraveling a little bit, but the question is, how is this season tackling sexual assaults? Because I guess I wasn't really even thinking about it as a trend or a theme. I hate using those words for this, but as something that was happening more often in the season, I guess, than I realized. Because we get that a lot of, all of the bombings happen around people who have been convicted of something like that. And I think in previous seasons, we've had more explicit conversations about that kind of stuff. Whereas here, the conversation comes from Keith, I believe, right? Because he's the one who makes that connection that everyone has been a victim of sexual assaults. And he makes it, but it kind of stops there.
He makes the connection, but it's also something that we see a lot at the beginning of the season. Basically, mm-hmm. every time we're at Comrade Quacks, like, and we see all the stuff that leads to this connection being made.
Yeah.
I think this season shows a lot of the, I hesitate to say smaller, but like less severe than rape aspects of sexual assault. Like, not like Veronica gets mugged. That's a different kind of assault than like someone gets drugged at the party.
It still felt very, it didn't feel, it had some sort of like sexual assault.
The mugging
thing. Yeah. To it. Cause yeah. I actually thought of that as well. And then I was like, oh, well, that's not actually sexual assault, but it kind of felt a little bit that way.
And he made a comment, that guy makes a comment to her, to Veronica later in the episode that brings it there as well. And like, we see the guy trying to get with the girl that's way too drunk. Like, we're seeing a lot of like kind of the everyday, unfortunately, aspects of sexual assault in this season, where like rape was a big part of previous seasons, but it almost seems like it's getting in there more this season. It's a different conversation.
And I'm wondering if it makes it more effective that we're not having the conversations in the show about it. Like, it almost, it feels so much worse in that this is, I mean, this is the world that we live in. We've all felt these sorts of things. We've all been made to feel uncomfortable. We've all, it's just happening everywhere. And so for a show that normally is very vocal about it to kind of go kind of silent, I don't know if it feels neglectful or if it feels even more scary and timely in that way. Does that make sense?
I think it feels neglectful because season three, you hear of a serial rapist on campus. Like, everyone knows, like, whoa, that's like a really big deal. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like, you see a girl that's too drunk at a bar going home with a guy, like, they're not having the conversation, but through Nicole, they're showing that like, this is a really bad thing.
Fair.
Like, okay. To be watching out for.
I take your point. Yeah, she's definitely one to watch through the rest of the season. I remember some of the things that kind of happen as we go along. But I think she's an interesting friend for Veronica to have. And I like the way in which there are a lot of different themes that we're kind of picking up in this episode running through Nicole specifically. Like the friendship, the how women are treated, as well as the sexual assault. But at the end of the episode, we get Veronica kind of returning to her normal ways, or kind of keeping to her MO of not trusting anyone. And she bugs Nicole's office.
I feel like that's like a rite of passage in being Veronica's friend.
Okay.
At some point, she's going to bug you. It just feels like it at this point, because we've seen her plant bugs on so many different, in so many different places, that, you know, if you are at all involved in an investigation, like, just be prepared at this point.
Yeah.
Like, I know Nicole is not prepared for that, and I'm sure that there's probably some hell to pay coming down the pike here. You know, between Nicole and Veronica when she like discovers it, because I have a feeling she'll know where it came from. You know, because you know, the same thing when she planted the bug in the plant all those years ago and it caused problems for Wallace and his mom and all of that. Like, she may not have bugged Wallace in that scenario, but she put him and his family in a bad position, you know, based on her need to get answers. So like, at this point, I kind of see it as like a, well, okay, well, you're to that part of your friendship with Veronica now. Like, she feels comfortable enough that she's going to plant this bug and that she can either talk her way out of it or convince you that it was for your own good.
So in that way, do you see her bugging Nicole as excusable because it's a Veronica thing?
I mean, it's not like in a normal place, in a normal world, by no means excusable.
Sure,
but
sure.
For Veronica, it's kind of business as usual, which is sad, but true. Like, this is not the first time she's bugged her friends. This is not the first time she's, you know, had to be skeptical of someone that she trusts and has had to, you know, do things. I don't necessarily know if she wants to have to be suspicious of Nicole, but she clearly has to be a little bit after everything her dad kind of puts together for her. And after this conversation with her in the alley and like all of that, she has reason enough to kind of put, you know, to raise her hackles a little bit.
I don't even think she sees it as excusable. I think when she does something like that, she's choosing her job over that friendship. Like, she knows that that friendship could end as a result of that, and that person would have every reason to do so. So I think she's doing what she has to do to an extent.
And I mean, if Nicole is in any way suspicious and could be the bomber, like, this is something we would want Veronica to choose that over a potential friendship.
Yeah, it's sad that she has to make that choice, but she does.
And it's one that she unfortunately just makes all the time, or has to make frequently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely something interesting to watch moving forward, for sure. Let me see. I want to keep talking about friendships. So I'm going to skip a little bit, and I want to talk about the scene with Veronica and Weevil. Because Weevil was always very much someone that, again, Veronica saw a bit of herself in, or she saw a similarity that she has with Weevil that she doesn't have with anyone else. And we get the explanation here a bit of why things are so tense and actually very broken between Weevil and Veronica. Kristen, I don't remember, and I probably should have asked this previously. Have you read the books, the Veronica Mars books?
I have read the first one. I have not read Kiss and Tell, I think. I've read the $1,000 Tan Line. I have not read Kiss and Tell.
Okay. So in that second one, actually, is where we get a lot of what they're fighting about. So as someone who didn't have that background and kind of came into this season really, I'm assuming, not knowing what had happened between the two of them, was this scene talking about what happened satisfying in setting up that dynamic or finally explaining it?
I think because the movie ends with like the inciting action for this conversation, because we see what we see, the thing that leads to them fighting. So
we do
him getting a him. Isn't this all pertaining to the person holding up Mrs. Kane?
Yeah,
we see that in at the end of the movie. Someone holds up Mrs. Kane and steals from her at her car, and then he gets the blame for it.
Well, he tries to help her, and she shoots
yeah.
She's being circled by PCHers.
It's been a while.
Of which he's no longer a part of. So he tries to help her. She gets scared. She shoots him.
Yeah.
So we
and
see
then
him
he gets blamed for the whole thing.
We see him in the hospital. And they talk about how the gun was planted on him. And then the last thing that we see is Veronica's kind of ending monologue talking about how a leopard doesn't change its spots, how PIing and her lifestyle is like an addiction she'll never be able to kick. And so we kind of see the same thing with Weevil going back to being in a motorcycle gang, and that's kind of how it's left.
Yeah. In $1,000 Tan Line, they did talk a little bit about this. They hadn't gotten to the point where, you know, we learned in this episode here that Veronica's dad did a lot of the work to try and get him off, and he ended up taking a deal. In $1,000 Tan Line, we got like the lead up to that. Like they were starting to work on it. Like everybody still believed Weevil was guilty, and we didn't actually see, I have not read the book that has all of the, like, you know, the huge story of her dad really working at it and figuring out a way to get Weevil off, you know, and get him out of prison and all that. But this, because I knew enough based on the book, that I didn't feel like I was completely like flailing. Like I didn't know. I had some idea of what they were talking about, you know, even without them basically giving you all of the backstory that you would have read if you had read the books. So it felt like, I feel like I know what's happened. I feel like I know basically what, you know, where we're coming from here. Do I wish that maybe they had found a way to weave it into one of the earlier episodes, like somehow, even if it's just, you know, Weevil checking in with a parole officer or something, or like whatever, just something that kind of gives you this impression that he is still dealing with the after effects of that, since we watched it happen on screen. And then there's these two random parts to the story that are not on screen anywhere. It does complicate matters. And so that does make it a little harder to understand. And I could see why people would be confused, but I think reading the one book helped me to just kind of fill in a few of the blanks.
Gotcha. That makes sense. I think this does a good job at not maybe harping on the issue that seems to have split them quite a while ago. But I think this also throws into sharp relief how the season is very much emphasizing new friends, new characters, new connections, and almost sidelining the older crowd and the people that we cared about previously. Like, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy the scene between Weevil and Veronica. This was one of the ones that I was going to choose as my favorite one. But with two characters with so much history, it kind of left me feeling wanting more. Because you can tell that they kind of care about each other and that something has really wedged them apart. But we just don't get, I guess, as much that would be satisfying. Kendra, how did you feel about this?
I think I felt confused. Like, I think that there's a lot of complexity in the relationship that I don't know if that had really stuck out to me quite as much before. So I guess my feelings were like, why, what do they each like value in each other? Like, why is it that they keep coming back? They keep coming back to help each other or save each other. I thought that was a good point that you made, that the similarities between them, like him not being able to give up the gang or not being able to give up being a PI. I don't know. I just felt confused, I guess, about where they were at and why.
It's so interesting too, because in watching that scene, especially this second time in watching it, you can see their old selves coming through. And I think of all of the characters, these two have been the ones like left most unchanged, I guess. Like, Weevil did change, but during that monologue at the end of the movie, like both he and Veronica went back to their old ways. And so it's interesting to watch them in that way as well. Like, they very much have those same tendencies that they did 10 years ago, for better or for worse. And that's coming through with the new layers of like what the years since have done to them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, other than the added layer of what's happened with that specific case, like, you could see them having that exact same conversation 10 years ago, like, mm-hmm. him coming to her and being like, come on, like, you're going to put my boy in jail?
Exactly.
Would be the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But then through this, to bring it back into what's going on in the episode, through this we find out that, or Veronica deduces that Big Dick and Clyde are in cahoots with Weevil and the PCHers and paying the PCHers to kind of rough up people around town, to shit an icebox, to mug people. They were giving out $100 a wallet and all that kind of stuff. And it's disappointing to see Weevil in this situation, because you can tell that he's not... One, Weevil is his own person, and so him working for anyone else is like a disappointment in itself. And you can tell that he's not happy with that. But like, for him to be in this situation because he feels like he doesn't have a choice, because he feels like this is his only path forward, is heartbreaking.
Especially when you think back to like, how happy he was in the movie,
oh
like
my God,
with his
yeah.
family and his little girl, and like, you could tell that he felt like he had like gotten out.
Yeah, very much so. All right, let's see what else. So then that kind of brings up Big Dick and Clyde. And I don't know if we're getting a bunch of brand new information at this point. It's kind of just solidifying theories that have been flying around or getting a little bit more information on that. Is this, I don't know. I think it's interesting that they're very much in the open, and it feels probably like one of the most plausible accusations for Veronica Mars that has come this early. And I think it's interesting about how much it's weaving in the past, because we get that Big Dick is using Beaver's old holding company as like a shell company to buy up all of these properties, which does not feel good. And if any of the members of our previous Veronica Mars round were on this episode, like, I would certainly think that they would feel victimized all over again. I don't know, but it's nice that it's bringing in the past, but I'm not sure how I feel about it being so much on Big Dick and Clyde. I'm not sure if it's holding my attention. I know how this all ends, but just thinking about in this moment, I'm not sure. I think at this moment it was holding my attention enough, because it just didn't seem like a, not that bombers need great motives, but it didn't seem like a great motive for it to be Big Dick and Clyde.
Agreed. Well, to some extent we figure out in this episode that they are, like, it's confirmed that they're doing something.
Sure.
We don't know if they're doing the thing. I think what brings it, what makes me care about it a little bit, is how close Keith is getting to Clyde. Like, Big Dick is kind of on the outskirts, but Clyde is like the main guy to be scared of, especially when he's getting so close to Keith and he could end up being in harm's way because of it.
And at the same time, he's so charming that it's hard not to like him as an audience member.
Definitely. But I don't know, in the hunting scene, I was starting to get a little bit scared of him.
Yeah.
But it was a very vulnerable place for Keith.
Yeah. I think the hunting scene was an interesting one for me, because that also pointed out in my brain the fact that we've never seen Keith have good friends.
Mm-mm.
Like, we've seen him interact with Cliff previously. We've seen him sort of interact with people his age. But in this season, they are very much emphasizing Keith's relationships with other people outside of his relationship with Veronica. So though he still interacts with Cliff, like, Cliff is his confidant that something is going on, that he's afraid about his memory loss. And we see him relaxing and getting day drunk with Clyde. It's a very different Keith that we're seeing, in a way. And I really like seeing him with these sorts of connections.
I think Enrico mentioned at Comic-Con that Keith had a girlfriend this season. So I don't, maybe that was a storyline that got cut.
Oh, interesting. Maybe. I'm trying to think of the last girlfriend that he had. Was it the married woman from Just Shoot Me?
I do not even remember who that
was. Gosh, I don't remember her name. I will find it. But it's been a while since we've seen him, I think, with anyone outside of Veronica, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to hear him talking about, like, this first concert he went to with, like, someone else.
Yeah.
Precious.
So precious. I don't know. It's lovely. So I do like seeing him have friends. I don't like seeing him make friends with scary people. And like, you, it's easy to see that he knows better. And actually Veronica talks about this with Keith at the end of the episode. They have that really great conversation about, like, hey, you didn't tell me all of these health things are going on. You didn't tell me that you're being set up with these fancy doctors because of Clyde. And Keith starts trying to apologize and trying to say, like, you know, I'm not mixing personal and professional. Like, I'm trying not to do that. And Veronica is like, no, I believe in your character immediately. Like, you're not one to be swayed, which I thought was a really great moment between the two of them. And it kind of reassures, I think, the audience at the same time that Keith would never do anything that risky. I don't know if that moment stuck out to either of you two.
Yeah, that was really great. The whole conversation was so cute, but then, especially where they have differing opinions sometimes, like they often don't have the same theories, like they don't usually work in the same way. So, but just to hear that, like, to confirm that steadfast belief that they have in each other was a good moment to have. And also just to hear her finally recognize that something's going on with her dad and to see how she's starting to deal with that.
Yeah. That moment before it clicks, where she makes a joke about having to, like, electrostim his brain every morning is so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because you can tell how sensitive Keith is about it. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the other thing is, like, we've seen Veronica be willing to, like, dive into the gray area more than Keith. I feel like Keith has always been a little more black and white with what's right and what's wrong, especially when it comes to PR work and where you cross the line and all of that. Like, he's always been a little more rigid than Veronica has been. And so to see him, like, kind of worry about the gray area here, like, you know, this is for my health and whatever. And Veronica's like, no, I would never question your character. If you can get the best doctors, you get them. And I believe that you will still do the right thing. Like, it just confirms that while she plays in the gray area too, and he doesn't usually, like, in this instance, he's fine. Like, it's not that gray. Like, she's basically like, you're barely tiptoeing into the gray, Keith. Don't panic.
And to a lesser extent here, it's his storyline mirrors Veronica's in that he is very much reassuring that I am not choosing my new friend over my job. Like, we have them both kind of making this active decision just to varying degrees.
For sure.
The more I think about this episode, the more I really like all of these threads that are running through. It could be me that I'm just, like, coming up with these things, but, like, I like all of these similarities and all of these mirror images kind of going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely there to be found, but it's not something that comes across on a first watch if you're not really looking for it. But there are a lot of through lines and a lot of things that are keeping the characters connected, even though you don't see them all in the same place. So no, I don't think you're just making it up, but
yeah. And this episode is just very heavy with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Any last thoughts about Clyde and Big Dick and what they're doing? I mean, Keith kind of spies on Clyde a little bit, which is fun to see him do, and then uses his memory loss as an excuse for holding Clyde's phone.
I get what you're saying about it doesn't quite seem to add up, like, their motive for doing the bombings, but I'm not fully convinced at this point that it's not them, because Clyde just seems like an untrustworthy guy, even though he is charming. Like, that charm can mask a lot, so I'm not sure that I'm ready to say that he's not willing to go as far as, like, the collar bombing, which is what Veronica said didn't, or Keith said didn't add up for it
didn't
to be
fit.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see, like, that's, I don't think the collar bomb would have been something that Big Dick could have come up with, but I could see Clyde using it as a way to kind of smokescreen things. Like, they won't expect us to have used it in that manner. Like, they're expecting us to use these big spectacle explosions and, you know, creating chaos, which is what the other bombs have done.
Sure.
Whereas that one is a very pointed single victim kind of scenario, and it is kind of the outlier. And I could see Clyde being smart enough to use that as a way to divert suspicion from them, whereas Big Dick would never have come up with that himself. So like it makes sense that they would be in it together, and it makes sense that they may be trying to pin it on someone else by utilizing bombs in weird ways or whatever.
Not the worst plan if you're a bomber, I guess.
No.
No. All right. I think the only other thing to touch on when it comes to Big Dick is we see a little bit of Penn, pizza guy, in this episode. Kind of thankfully, not as much as we have previously. We get a nice break from him. But he sort of bookends the episode in that he overhears the Mars duo kind of finding the bug and then toying with him a little bit. We see him with a murder head meeting where everyone is just going through that letter and like picking out the most random things, to the end where the girl that he's very much interested in from his murder heads group finds a similarity or finds something that could be considered a viable clue that would lead them towards Big Dick and Clyde. And I mean, of course, then they find a duck in the pizza guy's bed. So obviously Clyde was not happy with the accusations there.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming it was Clyde because he's the one who duck hunts. But
well, I thought the connection between the duck hunting and Comrade Quacks
was
also an interesting way. Like,
true.
The duck hunting is clearly, you know, that's where your brain goes first. But I also didn't discount the fact that there's a duck theme going on with Nicole and her bar, too. So, like, it's, I wouldn't necessarily see this coming from her at all, but it could be her, too. It's not completely unrelated.
Oh my gosh. So many layers. That's interesting. That didn't even cross my mind.
Before we move on from Big Dick, I just wanted to bring this up because I think you had brought it up in a previous episode, Danielle, sure. That it basically was confirmed in this episode that Big Dick and Clyde were responsible for putting the rats in the grocery store. And
you had
made the connection to Beaver putting the rat on the bus, I believe. So another connection between father and son.
Father, son, animals. Yeah, that's so weird. I do remember this now because I think I remember messaging you about it. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, like Big Dick is doing things with rats just like Beaver did. I feel like that was a really interesting callback, which I'm assuming is a callback. I would hope so.
I think so.
Just because Rob Thomas, I think, also wrote a book once, I think called Rat Saw God, was actually a book that he wrote too. So, like, he has rats on the brain frequently. but no, thank you for pointing that out. That's also for something that was kind of not made a huge deal out of at the beginning of the series, but for it to be explained away or like sort of solved in a offhand comment felt weird. In that I completely forgot that this is where that story kind of went.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems very random. And the fact that like Keith was working it, we saw them put security cameras in there and everything. And then just to have it be a footnote in a larger conversation was a interesting decision.
I think they had solved the case. I think they solved the grocery store case. Like they found who did it. I don't remember if it was Perry or someone else, but it all he mentioned in this one was that it was an ex-con, which Clyde would have had, and Clyde has connections to them from Chino. So yeah. I think he was just making the connection to that already solved case. Now he's making the connection that it's actually a part of this larger case.
Gotcha. So much stuff happens that it's so hard to keep everything straight. Let me see. There's just a few other things to talk about with this episode. One of the things that I want to touch on really quickly is Maddie and kind of tracking how the show is dealing with her. In this episode, the similarities between her and Veronica are more pronounced, I think, than ever. Like, they had been trying to draw that line or like kind of present her as a Veronica 2.0 previously, but I think they really go hard at it with her here, so much to the effect of like having Wallace sit by and knowingly watch Maddie and know what she's doing because he sat by and watched Veronica operate for years. Is it weird to have this sort of like generational thing going on in a show like Veronica Mars, like the passing of a torch in some ways?
Maybe, unless Veronica does end up moving on to a different career path, which was also brought up in this episode.
Yes, I want to get to that for sure.
Well, if she's probably not planning on having children, I don't think. I think she's said that before, unless mm-hmm. I'm crazy. Then, like, her legacy would come in a different way, I guess. And if Keith is probably going to be transitioning out of his role in Mars Investigations sooner than later, maybe they could end up working as a team. So I don't think it's completely out of left field. I think they did a way better job in this episode than any other episode in showing how Maddie is similar to Veronica. I think the show kind of made the connection before it was warranted. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe there were some cut scenes that would have made us feel differently. But I saw it a little bit in this episode, at least.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like for this show, it feels right for me. It kind of, like, I like the full circle moment of all of this. Like, you know, as Keith is kind of considering getting out of the business and thinking about stepping back, and yes, he wants Veronica to do the same, but, you know, he knows ultimately she's going to do what she wants. So, like, if she, you know, has found this, you know, her own little Veronica to kind of teach her ways to, and I think that it gives something more to the show than just, like, you know, Keith didn't necessarily teach Veronica. He didn't want to teach Veronica. She learned from him. He needed her to help him, you know, in reception, and he needed her to be in the office, but he didn't want her to live that life. Whereas in this case, Veronica, you can kind of see that she sees Maddie needs something in her life because she just lost her father and, you know, is dealing with being basically alone in this world. And I think giving Veronica a friend or someone who has that same drive that she had for a different reason, but a very similar drive, I think it is a really nice full circle, like, character defining moment for both Maddie and Veronica.
I also love the moment where Maddie tracks Veronica down and then gives all the reasoning why. I think that was a beautiful moment.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing we would have heard coming out of Veronica's mouth.
Yes. Oh yeah. You know, and then over explaining when you can tell that Veronica already knows.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, just from the first pathway. But
yeah,
it was great. I loved it very much. But let's quickly talk about, to kind of wrap everything up, let's talk about that conversation between Veronica and Keith a little bit more, and talk about him wanting to not only not be a PI anymore, but shut down Mars Investigations completely. Because we see Keith's worry about Veronica all the time. And we don't necessarily see him making decisions for Veronica. He kind of likes to sway her maybe one way or another, but I don't think he's ever outright proposed making this sort of decision for her and, like, wanting her to leave almost as, like, last wishes kind of thing. So we get his view on it. And then Logan kind of takes a similar but different view on why he thinks that Veronica should leave. And it's just a very charged moment that then turns towards Logan's insecurities and himself. So there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, would Mars investigations be Mars investigations without one of the Marses? And should it shut down?
I think it could be. And that, like, even the premise of shutting down Mars investigations seemed kind of out of left field to me, because that doesn't feel like Keith's call to make. Like, mm-hmm. he can stop being a PI if he wants to, or feels like he needs to, but it doesn't even seem possible for him to be, just be like, we're closing it down, just because, like, he's scared of Veronica doing it by herself.
Right. She's a partner now. So, like, he can't make that decision. And just because he started it, like, it's not his completely.
She kept it going when he couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's now more than just his business that he started, that Veronica has stepped in and, you know, helped with or whatever. She kept it going when he was injured because of the car accident, when he couldn't work. She kept the kids and food on their tables. So it's like, he doesn't really have the authority to be like, we're closing. He can try and convince her of it, but I don't think he would ever be able to. I do think it was curious if he ended up being her receptionist.
Oh my gosh.
Like, totally talk about full circle for them. Yeah, I think it would be really funny if, like, she said, you know, I could use your help around the office. You don't have to be a PI to, you know, send bills and answer phones or something like that. Like, that would be really fine.
Oh my gosh, I would love that so much.
So I guess the question is, are Keith and Logan right? Like, did this feel like a natural conversation to come up for you guys, or did it seem random?
I think with knowing how Keith has been feeling about himself, I think his proposing to close Mars investigations didn't seem too out of the ordinary, or didn't. It felt pretty natural, I think, that part. I think the part where Logan almost cut to the issue, I think, that Veronica has been having in terms of happiness, I think that felt very unexpected and very weird, partially because it seemed like he made it about himself almost immediately. Not in a way where it seemed like he was trying to be selfish about it, but like, in a way where it was a lot about his insecurities. And we haven't seen that before. And we haven't seen him try to make these decisions for Veronica. He'll say what he thinks Veronica should do, but ultimately support her. But I don't think we've seen him react in that way before. And so that felt weird. I don't know. What did you think about it, Kristen?
I think for me, Keith wanting to just flat out close Mars investigations was more alarming for me than Logan. Like, I'm never surprised that Logan can, like, make things about him. Even new Logan, because he has done much better. But it never surprises me that he can take a situation that does not involve him and end up turning it into something where he wants to be considered. Like, that has never surprised me. He's really good at making things about him. He's gotten a lot better at that. He's a better human these days, but he still has that in him. So, like, I think I was less surprised by that than I was by Keith taking things further than I thought he would. Like, I saw him thinking about retiring coming a mile away, but him wanting to take that from Veronica and close the business altogether, it seems like he had made some peace with the fact that she was choosing this and that this is where she was going and that he wasn't going to be able to stop her. She's not a teenager without a PI's license, you know, running around causing chaos. She's a licensed private investigator who knows what she's doing and knows how to get herself out of trouble more often than not. Like, it seems like a gross overstep for him I'm less surprised that Logan was able to kind of turn it into a different, a different conversation than I was with Keith.
What did you make of it, Kendra? Because we're kind of falling on different, not different sides, but
I think I fall closer on Danielle's side. I wasn't as surprised. Well, definitely wasn't surprised about Keith wanting to retire. It seemed a bit harsh for him to want to close Mars Investigations. But with the Logan stuff, I think the biggest surprise for me was his declaration of her not being happy there. Because even though Veronica's never been like happy-go-lucky, like this is who she's always been. Like, what would a happy Veronica look like if this isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And when has he started to feel that way? Like, if he hasn't thought that she's been happy this whole time, like, why bring it up now? But I guess it makes sense to bring it more to what Kristen said, that makes sense that he would be questioning if she was happy with him, considering she just rejected his proposal. But the notion that she might not be happy there in general is a weird one for me to wrestle with, because she's never felt any happier or less happy. So what's the goal for her, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or like the fact that, I think, like you said, we've never really considered that she wasn't happy. And she just kind of like lives in the chaos and like likes living in the chaos. I don't know what that would even look like, or if she would like it.
And he just said it as a fact. He was like, you're not happy here.
Yeah.
Since when?
I mean, we saw her come very not happy not being there.
Yeah.
Like, we watched her suffer through all of that. And you could tell it just was not where her heart was. She was doing her damnedest because she knew it was what her dad wanted, and she wanted to want it for herself. But, you know, no matter how she got into the PI game, you know, being based on Lily's murder and all of that, like, that's why she got into all of this in the start, to start with. But, like, now it's more than just a thing she does because she has to. Like, I think she likes it. I think she's happy to be the one to find the answers. And so I just flat out think Logan's wrong. He might just be out of touch or what, but I don't think he is clued into the fact that this is her happy, or at least a part of her being happy.
Like, there's no question that she's got some broken parts that need fixing, that perhaps she would be more fulfilled if she was willing to take steps to do that. But I don't think that happens somewhere else. I don't think that happens in a different setting or a different career choice. I think that work would be completely separate from all of those choices.
Agreed. Yeah.
Partially because she's tried that before.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was an interesting thing to kind of end everything on, or one of those like final scenes, I think, to end things on. And I'm curious to see how our opinions on basically the two men in Veronica's life almost making decisions or telling her how she should feel about things, or I don't know. It's something we haven't seen before, and I'm interested in focusing more on that in the weeks to come, just because it's not something that I don't think we've focused on previously. Any last thoughts, though, about this episode? We touched on a lot, and we kind of went all over the place, so I don't doubt that we missed a few things. But does anything else kind of stand out to anyone? Cool. Then let's wrap it up there.
I was like, yeah. I didn't think of anything.
Yeah, I know. We talked about a lot. We talked about much more than I thought we would have. I think once we started unpacking this episode, a lot of things, there was just more to talk about than at first glance, which is great. And I'm very happy about it. So let's leave everything there. We'll pick back up next week. But before we get into our kind of final segments, let's do our favorite scenes and favorite lines from this episode. My favorite scene was that discussion that we were just talking about, where Logan and Veronica were talking about how Veronica doesn't do what she wants. And Logan kind of really harping on that in an interesting way. Kristen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was the, like, it was brief-ish, scene with Veronica and Keith in the office where he is breaking down, like, Nicole's, the very real possibility that Nicole could be the bomber. And then Veronica kind of, like, comes back at him with all the reasons that Big Dick and Clyde could be the bomber, the bombing duo, I guess. But, like, I love watching them work. I love watching them, like, bounce ideas off each other, and like that is where I love Veronica Mars. Like, I love watching Keith and Veronica like go at it. Like, they each have their theories, and they both are so bullheaded. Like, they're determined to prove that they're right, but you know, ultimately they both know that the other is really skilled, and so it's like, okay, I need a sounding board, I need someone to kind of walk all of this by. And of course they're both able to come up with like the one reason why neither one could be, you know, like why, you know, there is a reason why Nicole would not be the bomber, is, you know, because it's her business. And like, there is a reason why Big Dick and Clyde would not be the ones behind this. So I love that. I just love watching them work.
So good. So good. Kendra, what was yours?
My favorite scene was Wallace's housewarming party, half because it was so triggering for me on a personal level.
Feel it.
But her and Nicole were also really funny together. So I liked it.
Yep. I love that one too. In terms of favorite lines, I was kind of going back and forth. Initially, I really loved the sheriff's rant at the beginning of the episode, where she was basically just like tearing that guy a new one. But I actually think my favorite line was a short exchange between Veronica and Logan, again, in that same scene, where Logan asks, if I wasn't around and your father wasn't around, what would you be doing? And Veronica replies, I would be sticking my head in the oven because the two most important people in my life would be gone. I think we've mentioned previously that this far, this season, I don't think is as quotable as previous seasons. But I think as far as quotes to go, I think that one is one that really sticks out for me that I remember from my first go round. Kristen, what was your favorite line of the episode?
I love watching Veronica and Keith kind of like go at it. So mine came from that scene, and it's Veronica says, point, set, match. My new friend is not a mass murderer. Yours probably is. Just, it's very them. It works.
I love that one too. I wrote that one down as well. It's a good one. And Kendra, take us home. What is your favorite line?
I just wrote, prostitute yourself. I thought it was funny when the pizza guy's crush showed up and said that. And
with no explanation. She just opens the door.
Yeah, prostitute yourself.
And he's like, okay.
What?
Oh, so good. So good. All right, those are our favorite scenes and favorite lines. We want to know what you have to say about this episode and about, well, this episode of Veronica Mars, as well as this episode of Rewatchable. So please get in contact with us. Again, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And then once you're done with all of that, if you could please rate us 5 stars on iTunes, just take like 2 seconds, give us 5 stars, maybe leave a comment about what you like. It'll help other people find us, which would be really great for everyone. And we can kind of build our family even more. And as always, we have an incentive for you this week. If you leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, then Karen, who is a legit snack, will bring you all the snacks. So I think that is a great incentive. I think that is something that she very much would love to do. So please rate us 5 stars.
And then like snacks.
Yes, like snacks, like a lot of snacks. And if you're so inclined, you may want to list all of those snacks after you leave your rating. List all of those snacks that you would like Karen to bring. There's no better place to do that than in our Facebook group. Again, that's called Rewatchables Rewinders. Just do a quick search. You'll be able to find us, no problem. If for some reason you are having problems finding us, that's cool too. Just tweet us and Brittany will be happy to shoot you the link. Before we wrap up for the day, we do want to get into a few pieces of listener feedback that we have. Let me see. Kristen, would you please get this first tweet?
Sure. Yeah. The first tweet comes from Rachel at SVEVA22 and says, I'm on season 2, episode 8 of Agent Carter and just realized there are only 2 episodes left. I'm sad to be losing Peggy and Jarvis, Sousa and Jack. I'd convinced myself there was a third season. And then the little crying emoji. One tear. Yeah. I mean, it's really sad that that show only has 2 seasons because it just, yeah. And it's terrible where it ends. Okay. We're past that, but not at all.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never past it, but yes, exactly.
But I'm glad you're enjoying it, even if it is almost over. I'm very sorry.
Even if it's ending, it's very sad. Yeah. Kendra, would you please take this second tweet?
Sure. At K Sheltiel on Twitter said, I love that straight 5 minutes of the latest rewatchable episode is just talking about how handsome Max Greenfield is. And that sounds like 5 minutes well spent.
Absolutely. I mean, Max Greenfield is also a snack.
Yeah. So.
Very much so. And we actually also have an email. Let me see. Kristen, would you mind reading this email for us?
Sure. It starts. Hi, all. Love the show so much. I just binged all the Veronica Mars eps for a second time. If you wanted to keep the Rob Thomas theme going, then may I suggest iZombie. It just finished off strong. It's got a fun procedural element and short seasons. Thank you for all the hard work. Danae. Thank you for emailing us.
And thank you for listening to Veronica Mars for a second time.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I started iZombie, like I watched like the first season and then I just kind of fell off of it, not because it was like bad, but just because it was on at the same time as something else or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that would be a very interesting show to dig into, not even just because of the Rob Thomas angle. Like it is a very interesting way to do a procedural esque kind of show. So I'm sure it's on the list.
And if not, we will definitely add it to the list.
I don't know how many seasons of that there are either. I think they had like 5 or 6.
I just finished it as well, actually, last weekend. I think there are 6.
Okay.
It sounds about right. And they're about 12 episodes each, I think.
Okay. That helps.
Yeah. Yeah. So something 3 full length seasons of things, I guess.
Yeah. Something to think about.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was our feedback and we're just about ready to wrap up. But before we do that, I do want to get Kristen's contemplations for Veronica Mars season 4, episode 6, Entering a World of Pain. Kristen, do you have any predictions as to what's going to happen or perhaps what that episode title means?
Well, it definitely doesn't bode well. Entering a World of Pain. Is it sad that I initially go to like the whatchamacallit, the Irish dudes?
Oh,
what are
yes.
Their last name. Why can't I think of it right now? I keep wanting to call them the Connollys, but that's not it.
Oh my god. It's Fitzpatrick's.
Fitzpatrick's, yes. I was like, I knew it was Irish or whatever.
Yeah, no.
It's sad that my brain initially went to the Fitzpatrick's because they are just pain. Like there's always just they're painful people to deal with on the show. But no, I mean, there's a lot of things this could mean, especially with how we left this episode, because Veronica is definitely feeling a little bit of pain thanks to her dad and Logan both kind of piling on about some things that, yeah. And then you've also got the bombings and you've got, you know, Maddie going through all of her issues. Like there's a lot of people that are dealing with a lot of different kinds of pain right now, in addition to Keith's health and all of that. So I don't really know what this means, but I have a gut feeling that the Fitzpatricks are involved. So I'm going to go with that.
All right. I like it. And we will leave it there. And we will just have to see what happens in the next episode. So until next week, until we discuss entering a world of pain, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Kendra.
Catch you later, marshmallows.
Bye.
Bye.